This is the Buy Like a Guy podcast. I'm Andy Kane, third generation jewelry store owner and professional diamond hunter. I'm going to say it like it is and give you the tools you need to buy an engagement ring and other diamond jewelry the same way you order your drink of choice, with complete and utter confidence. Welcome to Buy Like a Guy. Okay, so I am like super excited to have one of my heroes on this show, Buy Like a Guy. His name is Martin DeWitt, aka the Diamond Wizard. Martin's got more than 45 years experience as a master diamond cutter in the US. He's a former director of the American School of Diamond Cutting. He's an innovator in the industry. I mean, I met him through Hearts on Fire, which I've learned so much from Martin and all those people over the years. And he's probably one of the guys that basically teaches me how much I don't know. So that's why I wanted to have him on here, because he's well-spoken, knows his shit, and you're all going to learn something today, and so will I. So welcome, Martin.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome right back at you. Thanks for letting me do this. It's fun.
Well, I love your opinions because they're so, you just know a shitload, right? And I feel like it comes from just, you're one of those guys that has forgotten more than most people will ever learn, that kind of stuff.
I remember one time we were having a meeting and they said, well, I learned that from Martin. And somebody turned to me and said, Martin, is that true or is something you made up? And I said, well, you know, they always say ask an expert, and I am an expert. So whether it's true or I made it up, you can take it to the bank. It's true because I'm an expert.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Don't need to go looking any further.
Yeah. Just relax. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like today, I mean, we're going to talk about the question of questions, and I'm going to hit it like, and it really is because we do come up against this in the industry often. And that is the idea of diamonds being an investment, are more direct than that, that diamonds are a bad investment.
Okay.
And this is like such a loaded and sort of a broad topic, but I know my opinion of them as being a bad investment is a little bit skewed. But we had talked about this weeks and weeks ago when you were talking about, one thing that really struck me is you were talking about how diamonds values have changed over the past, I don't know what you gauged it at, 50, 40, 100 years?
Well, yeah. I mean, their history has been around for so long. And, you know, historically, until they found diamonds in South Africa, historically, and that was in the late 1800s, 1867 or so. And when they found them, they found them in quantities. The first 2 years of production in South Africa equaled all the production of diamonds ever from before.
Okay.
So they found lots of them, you know, but it's still relatively rare compared to other things. So this idea that they're, you know, as common as sand is insane. That's not true. They are rare, but their attributes are a whole nother thing as well. But that point in time was really interesting too, because that's what historically they had been in ownership of monarchs, you know, princes and queens and kings and rajas and all kinds of stuff like that. And after those monarchies started to fall is when they found pretty big quantities of them. So now all of a sudden they had more diamonds and they had less customers, you know, that, I mean, because diamonds were traded and it was big diamonds and they were significant and they would trade them between treasuries and stuff. They'd buy armies with them. They'd do all kinds of stuff with diamonds. It was an actual useful tool of trade because you could move a lot of wealth around very quickly and easily.
Okay. So then there was, even as far back then, there was just, they had a value. They were looked at as valuable from the get-go, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And if you found one, you had to give it up. You know, you had to give it to the royalty. That's how valuable it was. And smaller ones were not valued. I mean, these were, you're talking historic stuff you see in museums today, you know? But now, you know, investment takes on all kinds of weird notions. I mean, to me, an investment. Really, if you invest in something and you expect to earn off of it, that thing should make things, should do things. You know, you buy a diamond, mm-hmm. it doesn't make babies in the safe. You know, it also doesn't.
Well, it does. So, it's not in the safe, but it does help make babies.
It can. Yeah, that metaphor. Yeah. But anyway,
whatever.
But it does. You know, in that sense, it doesn't really do anything. Is it a store of wealth? Yes. Which diamonds are? Some more so than others. Certainly big, fancy colored diamonds today. People buy them 10 years later, they sell them for millions more dollars, you know. So those, I mean, the stuff that you see selling at Christie's and Sotheby's, if you think that's not a good investment, ask anybody who bought one 20 years ago. Their value has been enormous. And even in the last couple of years, it's skyrocketed. You know, does the average diamond that you buy in a jewelry store go up in value like that? Or does it hold its value? I mean, you buy an Armani suit, go try and sell that sucker. You know, it's
not, yeah.
You have to give it away to Goodwill, you know? So it holds its value. Historically, the price of diamonds, even since they were found in South Africa, even when De Beers pretty much did dominate the marketplace, that value went up over time. And right. De Beers, the big innovation that they had, it was actually Cecil Rhodes. The big innovation was mining in general is very boom and bust. So you find a mine, all of a sudden there's a lot of material, you can sell it, the price kind of goes down, and then all of a sudden the mine gets depleted and the price goes up. So very, very high level of fluctuation. And Cecil Rhodes came along when they found diamonds in South Africa and said, if we can get all the mines together as sort of an OPEC of diamond mines, we can control that price over time so that we can smooth out those booms and busts. Now, they didn't, historically, actually, as it turns out, they didn't so much control supply. The supply just kept on coming, kept getting bigger and bigger as more mines were found and whatnot. But what they did is what a lot of people forget is in economics, the other function that goes into price is demand. De Beers did a great job of increasing demand over time.
Right.
And that demand became very real. And you know, it goes back to, you know, sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You need to have a self-identity. You need to separate yourself from a crowd. And jewelry, historically, you know, I mean, you go back to cavemen and one guy had a pebble and another guy had a feather. You know, you adorned yourself, set you apart. You were part of a group, maybe based on certain adornment. You were a certain level in that group based
on
adornment.
So I could not. I agree with that so much, and I think most of the jewelers that I know, we fully believe that jewelry, and in particular, something like an engagement diamond, is a absolute need. To me, it's like art.
Yeah.
Or it's like music or paintings or.
And it's a means of expression. You know, some people, a small one, it tells exactly their story. That's what they believe in the tradition, and they're not ostentatious. And, you know, and some people, a big, large, flashy one, that's their story. You know, so there's all kinds of different levels of it, you know, which actually kind of you bring up the question about, you know, engagement rings. Is that a totally manufactured, you know, because of all this marketing, they just make that up and sucker us all in.
You know?
And so, you know, just off the top of my head, I was like, well, no, I mean, De Beers advertised for a long time. And interestingly enough, they quit doing that about 20 years ago already. They quit being a monopoly over 20 years ago. A lot of people don't know that.
Well, that has really held on, hasn't it? This idea that is something that just is not dying at all. It is so, maybe it's just because it's so ingrained in the previous generation or whatever, but it's amazing how many people still think that De Beers controls the diamond world.
Well,
of course they have an impact.
Being told that. Marketers today are saying flat out, hey, I got news for you. You know, this is a cartel. this is owned by De Beers. De Beers is a monopoly, like it's some kind of news. It is not news. In fact, yeah. It is false.
Yeah.
De Beers has not been a monopoly since about the night, about 2000, nor have there been blood diamonds since then, you know.
Another thing that's not going away.
Yeah. But the first engagement ring, back to that, I looked it up. I mean, you just do a quick search on the internet of almost anything and you'll find a relatively decent answer pretty quickly. And I looked up first diamond engagement ring, you know, Google that. And what comes up? 1477.
There you go.
Archduke Maximilian of Austria gave an engagement ring as part of a proposal to Mary of Burgundy. Right. Bingo. That's the first known one. So that, I mean, what?
Wait, does that precede De Beers?
No, 1477? De Beers was founded like in the 1880s. Okay.
Yeah.
By 400 years.
Come on. This is comedy gold, too, Martin.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like people, all you got to do is study history. And the other thing is, you know, well, you know, why a diamond? You know, well, I'm a diamond cutter. Okay, so I'm biased. There's no question about it. But there's a reason I'm biased. Diamonds are completely unique in the gem world. Completely. They are a superlative.
Mm-hmm.
They are... If you look at the hardness scale, diamonds are a 10 in hardness. Everybody knows that. It's the hardest substance there is. Okay. Sapphire is a 9. That's the closest to it.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between talcum powder, which is a 1, and sapphire is a 10th the difference between sapphire and diamond. Diamond just shoots off the scale. So it's harder. It had better... thermal conductivity. It's more resistant to electricity. It is,
you know, it has a high refractive index, so it shines.
It breaks white light into colors of almost any other gem substance. It is impervious to any kind of acid, corrosion, anything like that. It's virtually indestructible. There is no other gemstone you can put on your hand that has that kind of durability. So that's where they got the idea, you know, diamond is forever, you know, is because it has this very unique and just like mind-blowing difference between it and everything else. So, and then for me, you know, I consider myself sort of educated, you know, and passionate about things and all that. And I was always curious, why in hell I stay in this so long? I mean, I'm a diamond cutter. You would think that'd get boring at some point. Yes.
Right.
Thing over and over. Diamonds, just diamonds. What the hell? What is so interesting about that? You know, and the other diamond cutters I know who also have been in the business that long. I mean, same deal. These are interesting people. It's like, did they just get sucked into some mundane stuff and just glued and glom onto it? Or, you know, what is it? I learn something new about diamonds almost every day, but one of the things is diamond is carbon. It is the most rare form of carbon. It is also, I mean, because soot is carbon, and you know, graphite is carbon, but diamond crystallizes in the simplest crystal system that can be. So it's a triangular tetrahedron. So it's three bonds that are equal in size. You can't make a more simple geometric object than that without it being susceptible to folding or bending or whatever. You know, that's just solid as can be. And it's carbon. And carbon is the basis of all life.
Cool.
So,
super cool.
Hello, you know, that's like on a metaphysical level.
Yeah. I mean,
the Buddhists, the very first thing ever written in Buddhist text was the Diamond Sutra. Okay, the Diamond Sutra. And they believe that the diamond not only reflects the universe, everything that goes in a diamond reflects back out. It is the universe.
That is so Cool.
You know, so there's so many levels that you can talk about diamonds, you know, but back to your original question about its investments, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, if you invest in you can do a Chevy Nova, you know, that's already collectible, but
yeah, I'm trying to think that's a good investment right now.
Some boring car, you know,
yeah.
What would be better? Not a collectible, you know, just an average run-of-the-mill a Nissan Sentra, you know? Sure. Sure. Is that going to go up in value? Well, cars, we all know, you drive off the lot, just went half in value, no matter what the hell it is, unless it's a Ferrari, you know? But anyway, a Sentra, nah, you know, but a Ferrari, yeah. I mean, you can't even buy one unless you already own one.
Right.
You can't order one, you know? It's like, so different levels of the diamond trade, parts of it are very strong in terms of investment, but basically the investment for the average guy is to be able to make a statement you can't make any other way.
Yeah.
There's nothing that says it like that.
No, without a doubt.
Nothing says like, I love you like, here you go. I just went out and spent a stupid amount of money on something so freaking tiny that I can, you know, and then the first thing I did with it was give it away. So how's that for a smart investment?
But you know, and I think you were the guy. I mean, that said a while ago, long, long ago. I can't even remember where I heard you say this. I really do believe it was you who said, "Investment in a diamond is an investment of the highest kind. It's a personal investment." And I think a lot of this bad investment stuff is just people looking at it, and particularly guys, since I'm talking mostly to guys, which is like, well, what can I sell it for? You know, like I spent $5,000. What's it going to be worth in 10 years? You know, and that's a purely monetary investment.
Yeah.
I don't know. From my standpoint, when that marriage works and you fight through all the highs and lows and everything else, and that diamond's still there and it was with you through the whole thing, that sucker's worth way more than that $5,000. Like it's,
well, and it becomes it's priceless. Definitely going to be worth more than the Enron stock you bought.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
all right, thanks a million for listening to part one of our Diamonds a Bad Investment with the legendary Martin DeWitt. I did a hard stop there, but we're going to pick it up on the next episode, and he and I will wrap it up, talk about a few deep things. But all along the way, I believe it's been very informative. I hope you feel the same way too. Until next time, peace.